As he began to relax, he remembered what had just happened. He needed to get back to Burton as soon as possible. He would know what to do. Fletcher ran through the dark, using the moonlight to guide him down the goat path. He was sure that the others would not be far behind, probably carrying Diedrich with them. He would have 10 minutes at most before the word got out. If the guards heard that one of their own had been attacked, whatever the circumstances, it was unlikely Fletcher would live long enough to stand trial. Even if he did, with Casper's connections, he wouldn't get a fair hearing, and the only two witnesses would have no problem lying. The village was silent as a shadow. Everyone was asleep in their beds. As he jogged up to the main gates, he was overjoyed to see the gatehouse above lay empty. One of his attackers must have skipped their shift to hunt him down. The forge was lit by the soft glow of coals, smoking gently as they burned themselves out. Burden was asleep in the wicker chair, in the exact same position he had been in when Fletcher sneaked out. There was no time to waste. He needed to escape. The thought of leaving Pelt cut him to the core, his heart clenching at the notion. For a moment, he could see the life of a vagrant ahead of him, wandering from town to town, begging for scraps. He shook the thoughts from his head. One thing at a time. With a heavy heart, Fletcher shook Burden awake.
"What is it?"
he slurred, slapping at Fletcher's hands.
"I'm sleeping. Wake me in the morning."
Fletcher shook him again, harder this time.
"Wake up! I need your help! There isn't much time,"
Fletcher said.
"Come on!"
Burden gazed up, then started as the curious imp dropped from Fletcher's shoulder onto his chest.
"What the hell is that?"
he yelled, leaning as far away from it as possible. The demon squawked at the noise and gave a half-hearted swipe at Burden's beard.
"It's a long story, but I'll have to make it quick. You should know I'm going to have to skip town for a while,"
Fletcher began, picking up the imp and laying it on his shoulder. It curled around his neck and emitted a soft purr. He spoke as quickly as possible, skipping the details but making sure Burton understood all the facts. In the retelling, Fletcher realized what an idiot he had been to walk to the graveyard through the center of the village, where anyone could have seen him. When he had finished, he stood there woodenly, trying to catch his breath and hanging his head in shame as Burden rushed around, lighting a torch and then packing things into a leather satchel. Burden only had one question.
"Is he dead?"
he asked, looking Fletcher in the eye.
"I don't know."
He hit his head pretty hard. "Whatever happens, his face will be badly burned. They'll say I attacked him with a torch, lured him to the graveyard, then tried to kill him. I've let you down, Burden. I've been a fool," Fletcher cried. Tears welled in his eyes as Burden handed him the deep satchel, the same one he had used to transport the swords to the elven front. He threw the book into the bottom with a sob, wishing it had never come into his possession. Despair seemed to be crushing his heart like a vice. The big man put his hands on Fletcher's shoulders and gripped them, sending the demon skittering to the floor.
"Fletcher, I know I've never told you this, but you are neither my apprentice nor a burden. You are my son, Fletcher, even if we do not share the same blood. I am proud of you, prouder than ever tonight. You stood up for yourself, and you have nothing to be ashamed of."
He gripped Fletcher in a bear hug, and Fletcher buried his face in his shoulder, sobbing.
"I have some gifts for you," Burden said, brushing tears from his cheeks.
He disappeared into his room and came back holding two large parcels. He shoved them down into Fletcher's satchel and gave him a forced smile.
"I was going to give these to you on your 16th birthday, but it's best I give them to you now. Open them when you're far away from here. Oh, and you're going to need protection. Take this."
A rack of weapons lay against the far wall. Burden selected a curved sword from the back, where the rarer items were kept. He held it up to the light. It was a strange piece, one that Fletcher had never seen before. The first third of the blade was the same as any sword, a leather hilt followed by 4 inches of sharp steel. But the next part of the sword curved in a crescent, like a sickle. At the end of the curve, the sword continued on with a sharp point once again.
You've no formal training, so if you end up in trouble, well, let's not think about that. This sickle sword is a wild card. They won't know how to parry it. You can trap their blade in the curve of the sickle, then move in past their guard and hit them with the back edge of it. The point is long enough for stabbing, so don't be afraid to use it in that way too.
Burden demonstrated, swiping the sickle down and to the side, then bringing the back edge up at head height and stabbing violently.
The outer edge of the sickle is curved like a good axe head. You can use it to split a shield, or even chop down a tree if you need to, far better than any sword could. You can take a man's head from his shoulders with a good backswing.
He handed the blade to Fletcher, who strapped it to the back of his satchel with a leather belt.
Keep it oiled and away from the damp. Because of its shape, it won't fit in a conventional scabbard. You'll have to get one made when you get a chance. Tell the blacksmith it's a standard-sized kopesh. They will know how to make one if they know their trade,
Burden said.
Thank you. I'll do that,
Fletcher said gratefully, stroking the leather pommel.
As for that demon, keep it hidden,
Burton instructed, peering into the imp's amber eyes.
You'll never pass for a noble, nor should you try to. Even if someone hasn't heard about Didrik, it's best to avoid attention.
Fletcher gathered the demon into his arms and examined it, wondering how exactly he would keep the unruly creature out of sight. Suddenly the bells began to toll, their brassy knells reverberating in the streets outside. Even with the bells clamoring, Fletcher heard distant shouts down the road.
Go, but not to the elven front. That's where they will expect you to run. Head south, to Corsilum. I'll bar the forge's door. Make them think you're still in here. I will hold them off as long as I can,
Burden said, shoving him out of the forge and into the cold night air.
Goodbye, son.
Fletcher caught one last glimpse of his friend, mentor, and father, silhouetted in the doorway. Then the door slammed shut, and he was alone in the world, but for the sleeping creature around his neck. A fugitive. 13. It had been 2 days. 2 days on the run, cutting back and forth to leave false trails. No food, no sleep, only drinking when he waded down the mountain streams, trying to kill his scent and leave no footprints. Whenever he stopped to rest, he could hear the bark of the hunting dogs in the distance. At night, he would climb to the top of a tall tree to check his direction by the constellations in the sky. When he did, he saw the flicker of campfires in the valleys above him. The whole town guard, and probably most of the hunters, were chasing him. Didrik's father, Caspar, must have put a huge bounty on his head. Now, on the third night, he could only see tiny pinpricks of light halfway up the mountain. They had turned back, the trail gone cold. He breathed a sigh of relief and began the long climb down, careful not to lose his footing. Any injury, even a sprained ankle, could mean death now. He did not let himself become too complacent. Lord Faversham, a powerful noble, owned most of the land around the base of Beartooth. He was notorious for sending patrols of his men through the forest to catch poachers. Fletcher would have trouble explaining to them why he was traveling alone, so far away from the safe mountain paths. The demon hissed with displeasure at being disturbed when he dropped to the ground. It had stayed in its customary position around his neck since he left the village. Fletcher was glad that it had. He had been cold and wet through for far too long. But the furnace in the demon's belly kept his neck and shoulders warm, at least. Fletcher looked around, then decided that the base of the oak tree was as good a place as any to camp. The ground was flat and covered in springy moss. The tree's canopy would keep off the worst of any rain, and although it was too late to build a shelter, there were plenty of dead branches lying around for a small fire. He stacked a pile of kindling together, then used a flint and the steel of his blade to spark at the tinder.
"You couldn't spare us some of that fire now, could you?" Fletcher asked the demon, as the damp leaves he was using spluttered against the sparks.
The demon unraveled at the sound of his voice, slinking down his arm to the ground. It yawned and looked at him with curiosity, cocking its head to the side like a confused puppy.
"Come on, there's got to be a way we can communicate," Fletcher said,
curling his fingers under the demon's chin and scratching it. The demon chirped and rubbed his hand with the side of its head. With each rub, Fletcher could feel a hint of a deep satisfaction on the edge of his consciousness, like an itch being scratched.
"Fire!"
Fletcher announced, pointing at the woodpile. The demon yapped and whirled in a circle.
"Shush!"
Fletcher hushed, a flash of fear running through him. The lower mountains were notorious for wolves. He had already heard their howls in the distance. They had been lucky so far to avoid them. The demon silenced and cowered, crawling between his legs. Had it understood? Fletcher sat cross-legged in the damp, wincing as the back of his trousers became wet. He closed his eyes and racked his brains, trying to remember if Rotherham had mentioned anything in his stories about how summoners controlled their demons. As he did so, he sensed the consciousness of the demon, just as confused, scared, and alone as himself. He sent it a wave of comfort and felt the demon stiffen, then relax, the fear and loneliness replaced by simple tiredness and hunger. Then it clicked. That was how. It didn't understand his words. It sensed his emotions. He sent the demon a feeling of coldness, but the demon simply shrilled in discomfort and wrapped itself around his leg. Given how warm its body felt, Fletcher suspected it was not very familiar with any temperature other than one of warmth. Perhaps an image? He pictured fire, bringing back memories of the hot furnace in Burden's Forge. The demon chirruped and blinked its round amber eyes at him. Perhaps it reminded the little creature of home. Fletcher rubbed his numbed hands together in frustration. This was going to be harder than he'd thought. He slumped and pulled his threadbare jacket closer around his shoulders.
"If I had managed to buy that jacket at the market, we wouldn't even need a fire," Fletcher grumbled.
He stared at the woodpile, willing it to burst into flame. Without warning, a gout of fire shot from between his legs, flaring the dank wood into a cracking blaze.
"You clever little thing!"
Fletcher whooped, gathering the imp up in his arms and hugging it close to his chest. Already he could feel the warmth seeping back into his frozen limbs. He smiled as the mellow glow brought back fond memories of Burden's Forge.
"That reminds me,"
Fletcher said, dropping the demon into his lap and rummaging through the satchel. With the constant pursuit, he had almost forgotten the gifts Burden had given him. He took the larger of the packages out and tore into it, his hands still clumsy from the cold. It was a bow, lacquered with clear varnish and strung with a fine braid of conditioned rawhide. The wood was intricately carved, the two ends curving in and then outwards at the ends, for extra power when bent back. The wood was yew, an expensive timber that Burden must have purchased from a trader the year before. It did not grow on the mountains. He had treated and dyed it so that the usually pale bow had become grey, preventing it from catching the eye when the hunter crouched in the shadows. It was a beautiful and valuable weapon, the kind a master huntsman would pay through the nose to own. Fletcher smiled and looked up at the top of Beartooth, giving silent thanks to Burden. It must have taken him months to make, working on it in secret when Fletcher was out hunting. There was even a slim quiver of fine goose-feather arrows. He might be able to catch a mountain hare in the morning. With that thought, Fletcher's stomach rumbled. He put aside the second gift and delved into the bottom of his rucksack, taking out a weighty packet wrapped in brown paper. He opened this one with more care, and smiled as he saw the jerky from the elk that Didrik tried to blackmail from him. He put a few strips on the fire to heat up, then passed another to the demon. It gave it a wary sniff, then jerked its head forward and snapped at it, lifting its head upwards and gulping it down whole like a hawk.
"Almost took my fingers off there," Fletcher observed, as the smell of cooking venison wafted under his nose.
He reached into the bag again to see what other food was in there. He felt something that jingled and pulled out a heavy purse.
"Oh, Burden, you didn't,"
Fletcher murmured in wonder. But he had. From what Fletcher could see, it was over 1,000 shillings, almost 2 months' wages for Burden. Even knowing that his business would soon be under threat, the man had given Fletcher a good chunk of his savings. Fletcher almost wished he could go back and return it, then remembered the 300 shillings he had saved up for the jacket, still sitting in his room. Hopefully Burden would find it, and the rest of Fletcher's old possessions would likely fetch some money as well.
"What else have you given me?"
Fletcher whispered. He picked up the second gift and shook it, feeling something soft and light. There was a note pinned to it, which Fletcher tore off and read by the flickering firelight.
"Fletcher, we have always known that the day we call your birthday is likely not the day you were born. Yet to me, it will always be the most important day of my life. It is the day I became a father, and you became my son. Tonight we shall go for a drink together and discuss the future of the business. I am going to make you a full partner. Heaven knows you deserve it. This gift is just a small token of my appreciation for everything you have done for me over the years. I am so proud of you. Happy birthday, son. Burden."
Tears dripped onto the letter as Fletcher folded it, his heart full of longing for home. He opened the gift and sobbed as he saw the jacket he had wanted, burying his hands in the soft inner lining.
"You were a better father to me than my true father could ever have been,"
Fletcher whispered, looking up at the mountains. Somehow the words he had left unsaid over the years were what he regretted the most. The demon began to mewl at Fletcher's misery, licking his fingers in sympathy. Fletcher patted its head and shuffled closer to the fire, allowing himself a few minutes of sadness. Then he wiped tears from his eyes, put on the jacket, and pulled a hood over his head. His heart filled with resolve. He was going to make a new life, one that Burden would be proud of. He was going to make it to Corsilum. 14. The tavern reeked of unwashed men and stale beer, but then Fletcher supposed he didn't smell too rosy himself. 2 weeks of travelling in a wagon full of sheep did that to a body. The only fresh air he had managed the entire time was when he went out to buy cheap bread and thick slices of salted pork from the locals. He had been lucky. The cart driver had asked no questions, only charging 5 shillings, and asking that Fletcher muck out the dung from the back every time they stopped. Now he sat in the corner of one of Corsilum's cheap taverns, relishing the taste of warm lamb and potato broth. He had barely seen any of the city yet, instead entering the first tavern he could find. Tonight he would pay for a room and have a hot bath brought up. Exploring could wait until tomorrow. He felt like the stink of sheep had become permanently ingrained in his skin. Even the imp was reluctant to venture out from its customary place within the confines of his hood. In the end, He had to bribe it with the last of his salt pork, feeding it until it fell asleep. Still, the little creature had made the long, dark journey bearable, curling up in his lap to sleep in the cold of night. Fletcher could share in its feelings of warmth and contentment, even while he shivered in the soiled straw of the cart.
"One shilling,"
said a woman's voice from above him. A waitress held out a grimy hand, pointing at his food with the other. Fletcher dug into his bag and pulled out the heavy purse, then dropped a shilling into her waiting fingers.
"Now, tip, with all that silver,"
she screeched, then strode off, drawing looks from other patrons in the tavern. Three hard-looking men paid particular attention. Their clothes were dirty, and their hair hung in greasy locks around their heads. Fletcher grimaced and stowed his purse. They had never needed pennies up in the mountains. Everything was priced in shillings. Pennies complicated things. It was 100 copper pence to a silver shilling, and 5 shillings to a gold sovereign in the big cities of Hominum. But Fletcher's purse contained only silver. He would ask for change when he paid for his room, so that this didn't happen again. It was frustrating to make such an obvious mistake, but he couldn't exactly tip her with the same cost as his meal now, could he? Another man seated behind the three vagrants was still staring at Fletcher. He was handsome but fearsome looking, his chiseled face marred by a scar that extended from the center of his right eyebrow down to the corner of his mouth, leaving a blind, milky eye in its wake. He had a pencil-thin mustache and curling black hair that was tied in a knot at the nape of his neck. The uniform he wore marked him as an officer of some kind, a long blue coat bordered with red lapels and gold buttons. Fletcher could see a black tricorn hat laid on the bar in front of him. Fletcher sunk into the shadows and pulled his hood further over his head. The demon shifted and grumbled in his ear, unhappy at being kept in the dark for so long. The hood did a good job of hiding it, especially when he raised the collar of his shirt, but the way the officer stared at him was disconcerting. He gulped down the last of his broth and stuffed the bread that came with it into his pocket to give to his demon later. Perhaps another tavern would be a better place to stay, away from everyone who had seen the weight of his purse. He ducked into the cobbled street and hurried away, looking over his shoulder. Nobody seemed to be following him. After a few more paces, he turned his jog into a stroll, but kept in mind the need to find another inn. It would be dusk soon, and he didn't like the idea of sleeping in a doorway that night. Already he was marveling at the tall buildings, some over 4 stories high. Almost every one had a shop on the ground floor, selling a multitude of goods that had Fletcher itching to get his purse out once more. There were red-faced butchers with strings of sausages decorating their store, blooded to the elbows as they portioned heavy haunches of meat. A carpenter put the finishing touches to a chair leg with magnificent carvings, like a tree entwined with ivy. The alluring scent of cologne wafted from a perfumery, the glass shelves on display filled with delicate colored bottles. He stumbled to the side as a horse-drawn carriage pulled up, exited by a pair of girls, their hair ringleted in pretty curls and their lips painted like red rose petals. They were gone into the perfumery with a swish of their petticoats, leaving Fletcher open-mouthed. He grinned and shook his head. "Not for the likes of you, Fletcher," he murmured, continuing on his way. His eye was caught by the shine of metal. A weapon store bristled with pikes, swords, and axes. But that was not what drew him. It was the firearms, gleaming in velvet-lined cases on a stall in front of the shop. The stocks were carved and dyed red, with each of the barrels engraved with stampeding horses. "How much?" he asked the vendor, his eyes fixed on a gorgeous pair of dueling pistols.
"Too much for you, laddie. These weapons are for officers. Beautiful, aren't they, though?"
said a deep voice above him. He looked up and blinked in surprise. It was a dwarf. Of that, Fletcher was certain. He stood on a long bench so that his head was level with Fletcher's, but without it, he would have only reached Fletcher's midriff.
"Of course, I should have known. I've never seen finer. Did you make them?"
Fletcher asked, trying not to stare. Dwarves were not common outside of Corsulum, and Fletcher had never seen one.
"No, I'm just a vendor. Still doing my apprenticeship. Perhaps someday, though,"
the dwarf said. Fletcher wondered at how the dwarf could still be an apprentice. He looked much older than him, with his heavy beard and whiskers. His beard reminded Fletcher of Burden's in color, but the bristles were much thicker and longer, plaited and braided with beads throughout. The dwarf's tresses were just as long, hanging halfway down his back in a ponytail kept by a leather thong.
"Are your masters looking for any new apprentices? I have plenty of experience in the forge, and I could use the work,"
Fletcher said, his voice hopeful. After all, what else was he going to do to find money in this expensive city? The dwarf looked at Fletcher as if he were stupid, then his face softened.
"You're not from around here, are you?"
the dwarf asked with a sad smile. Fletcher shook his head.
"We won't hire any men. Not while we don't have the same rights, and not while we still hold the secrets to gunmaking. It's nothing against you personally. You seem like a nice enough fellow,"
the dwarf sympathized.
"You'd best go to one of the non-dwarven blacksmiths, though there are only a few. They do well enough. Plenty of soldiers refuse to buy from the dwarves. But I hear they aren't hiring these days. Too many applicants."
Fletcher's heart dropped. Blacksmithing was the only profession he knew, and he was too old now to become an apprentice in another trade. There were no forests near the city to hunt in either, unless the jungles over the southern frontier counted.
"What rights are you denied?
I know the king granted you the right to join the military last year," he asked, suppressing his disappointment.
"Oh, there's plenty. The law dictating the number of children we can have each year is the most galling. We can only have as many children as the number of dwarves who died the previous year. Given that we can live almost twice as long as you humans, that's just a handful. As for the right to join the military, aye, that's a step in the right direction. The king is a good sort, but he knows his people don't trust us, especially the army, thanks to the dwarven uprisings 80-odd years ago. The thinking goes, once we've proven our loyalty by shedding blood beside his soldiers, well, then the king will revisit giving us equal citizenship. But until that time, this is how it has to be."
The dwarf's voice was tinged with a hint of anger, and he turned away as if overcome with emotion, rummaging in a box behind him. Fletcher remembered the scorn from the other villagers in Pelt when it was announced that dwarves would be fighting in the Hominum army. Yakov had been joking that they could barely brush his balls if they walked between his legs. The stout dwarf's arms were thicker than most men's thighs, and his barrel-like chest reflected his deep, booming voice. If Yakov took this dwarf on, Fletcher knew who he had put his money on. The dwarves would make formidable allies, indeed.
"Do you know anywhere cheap and safe to stay around here?"
Fletcher asked, trying to change the subject. The dwarf turned back and handed him something, closing Fletcher's hand over it before anyone saw.
"There's a place not far from here. It's a dwarf-friendly tavern called the Anvil. Maybe somebody can find work for you there. Say Atoll sent you. Take the third right down the street. You can't miss it."
The dwarf gave him an encouraging smile and turned to another customer, leaving Fletcher holding a square of paper with an anvil printed on the center. Fletcher smiled and headed in the direction the dwarf had pointed, then remembered he had forgotten to thank him. As he turned, he locked eyes with the scruffy men from the tavern, their faces lighting up in recognition. They careened towards him, and Fletcher began to run. People stared as he jostled through the street, earning himself a clip round the ear as he brushed past a well-dressed man accompanying a young lady. Just as he was about to reach the turning for the tavern, the street was blocked ahead by two carriages, the horses wheeling and neighing as their drivers yelled at each other. Cursing his luck, Fletcher was forced to turn down a side alley. He sprinted into it, glad to at last be away from the thronging crowds. The street was empty, the shops on either side already closed for the night. Then he stopped short, his heart hammering in his chest. It was a dead end. 15. Fletcher used the time he had before the thieves arrived to coax the demon onto his shoulder. It dug its claws into the leather of his jacket, sensing his agitation. "Be ready, little fellow. I think this is going to get messy," Fletcher murmured, knocking an arrow to his bow and kneeling for better aim. The men rounded the corner and stopped, staring at him. "Back off, or I'll put this through your eye! I've no qualms about putting down a cut purse," Fletcher shouted, squinting down the arrow at the largest of them. The man smiled, showing a mouth full of yellow teeth.
"Aye, I've no doubt. But you see, we're not so much cut purses as cutthroats, if you catch my meaning."
The man sneered and held up a curved blade.
"All we want is your purse, and we'll be on our way. No harm done."
He took a few steps forward, putting himself within 10 feet of Fletcher. The demon hissed and huffed twin plumes of flame from its nostrils that flared just a few inches from the man's face, sending him stumbling back into the others.
"I'm not messing around here. Leave now, or you'll regret it,"
Fletcher shouted again, though his voice trembled. He glanced at the silent houses around him. Why hadn't anyone heard? Someone needed to call the Pinkertons. How wretched it would be to have made it this far, then to die in a dank alleyway on his very first night.
"Ah, a summoner. You're one of them adepts from Vokan's Academy, aren't ye? Little past your bedtime now, isn't it?"
the man said, brushing himself off.
"Leave,"
Fletcher said, realizing the demon could probably only breathe fire a certain distance. He didn't want to test that tonight.
"Well now, you've shown me yours. Let me show ye mine,"
the man said, then whipped out a pistol and pointed it at Fletcher's chest. Fletcher almost loosed the arrow then and there, but the muzzle jerked as the man walked forward once again.
"Now, which one do ye think will hit faster, the gun or that there bow?"
the man asked with easy confidence. Fletcher eyed the pistol. It was an ugly thing, the metal rusted and the barrel cracked and worn.
"It doesn't look too accurate,"
Fletcher said, backing away.
"Aye, you're right there. But say it missed, and you put that arrow through my eye. My two friends here will come at you sharp-like, and slit you from ear to ear. We could both die here, or ye could make it easy and give us what we want. There's nought spellcraft or a demon can do against a bullet, summoner,"
the man said, his voice steady and confident. Something told Fletcher the thief had played this game before.
"I'll take my chances,"
Fletcher said, loosing his arrow. The pistol belched smoke with a clap, and Fletcher heard the crack of an impact near his chest. Light flared across his vision, yet he could feel no pain. Perhaps that would come later. The demon's squeals rung in his ears as he crumpled to the ground, smiling grimly as he saw the thief fall with an arrow in his skull. The two men behind stood frozen. They had not been expecting Fletcher to go through with it.
"Wrong, actually,"
came a well-spoken voice from the shadows at the end of the street.
"There's plenty spellcraft can do. Like throwing up a shield, for example."
The scarred officer Fletcher had seen in the tavern emerged, striding in between the two men left standing. A growl came from the gloom behind him, so loud that Fletcher could almost hear it rumbling in his chest.
"I would run if I was you," advised the officer.
Without a second look, the men turned tail and sprinted around the corner. From what Fletcher could hear, they did not make it very far. A loud snarl echoed from out of sight, followed by screams that swiftly descended into a horrid, gurgling sound. Fletcher covered his face with his hands and took deep, sobbing breaths. That had been a close call.
"Here," said the officer, holding out his hand. "You're not injured. My shield saw to that."
Fletcher took it and was pulled to his feet by the man's surprisingly soft hand. He patted his chest, finding no damage. Instead, a glowing crack seemed to hang in the air in front of him, like broken ice on an opaque lake. It was embedded in a large translucent oval, floating in front of him. It was barely discernible to the naked eye. Even as he reached out to touch it, the shield faded into nothingness. He noticed the bullet had fallen to the ground, its round shape flattened by the impact.
"Follow me,"
said the officer, striding off without looking at him. Fletcher paused for a moment, then shrugged. The man had saved his life. He wasn't going to question his intentions. The imp clambered up Fletcher's back and slid into his hood as he followed, exhausted by the excitement of the encounter. He was glad, for the officer had been staring intensely at the demon.
"Sakarissa!"
the officer yelled. A shadow detached from the gloom and nuzzled the officer's hand. The officer tutted in disgust as the creature's muzzle bloodied his fingers, then pulled out a handkerchief from his pocket and wiped them fastidiously. Fletcher darted a glance at the demon and caught sight of a dog-like creature with four eyes, a normal set with a smaller set about an inch behind. However, the paws were more like a feline's than a dog's, with claws over an inch long and caked with blood. Its fur was black as a starless night, with a thick mane that ran along the ridge of its spine down to a bushy tail that put Fletcher in mind of a fox's. It was as large as a small horse, its back coming up to Fletcher's chest. He had imagined other demons to be the same size as his own, yet this one was large enough to be ridden. The enormous creature's flanks rippled with muscle as it prowled beside them, making Fletcher almost sympathetic to the men who had died at its hands. He and the officer walked on in silence. Fletcher considered the tall man beside him. He was a hard-faced yet handsome man, perhaps in his 30s. The battle scar that adorned his face filled Fletcher with imagined images of battles being fought, arrows whipping overhead. The streets were already beginning to empty, and though the creature attracted a few furtive looks, they were soon alone as they turned off the main road and down an empty street.
"What kind of demon is that?"
Fletcher asked, if only to break the silence.
"A canid. If you'd paid attention in your classes, you would know that. It's probably the first demon they introduced you to. God knows it's the most common. So, you're a truant and a dunce. I would expel you on the spot if we didn't need every adept we can get, no matter how sorry an excuse they are for a summoner."
"I'm not from the school. I only arrived in the city this morning,"
Fletcher said indignantly. The officer stopped dead in his tracks and turned to face him. The man's unblinking milky eye stared at him for a moment before he spoke.
"Our inquisitors said that all the commoners who tested positive as adepts arrived at the school last week,"
the officer asserted.
"If you're not one of them, who are you? A noble? And who gave you that demon?"
"Nobody gave me the demon. I summoned it myself,"
Fletcher replied, confused.
"Ah, you're a liar,"
the officer said, as if he had finally understood, then continued walking.
"I'm not,"
Fletcher growled, grabbing the man by his coattails. In an instant, the officer had him up against the wall, holding him by the scruff of his neck. Fletcher's imp hissed, but a warning growl from Sakarissa silenced it.
"Don't ever presume to touch me again, you little prig. I've just saved your life. Then you decide to tell me a preposterous lie. Everybody knows that summoners must be given a demon by someone else before they can capture their own. Why, next you'll claim you walked into the ether yourself and plucked a demon out like a pea from a pod. Now tell me, which summoner gave you the demon?"
Fletcher kicked at the air, choking as his windpipe was crushed. A name floated unbidden to his mind.
"James Baker!"
he gasped, patting at the officer's hands. He let Fletcher down and smoothed some imaginary wrinkles on his jacket.
"I'm sorry. I let my anger get the better of me," he apologized,
his face filled with regret as he saw the welts his fingers had left on Fletcher's neck.
"The war takes a toll on the mind. Let me make it up to you. I'll book you a room at my inn, and I'll send you up to Vokan's Academy on one of the supply wagons tomorrow. My name is Arcturus. And yours?"
He held out his hand. Fletcher took the hand and shook it, the violence instantly forgiven at the mention of the Academy. Its reputation was legendary, the training ground of battle mages since Hominum was first founded. What took place there was a closely guarded secret, even to the soldiers that fought alongside them. Arcturus's invitation was far beyond anything Fletcher had dreamed possible for him and his demon.
"Fletcher! No harm done. I'd have far worse than a bruised neck if it wasn't for you. The way in which I received my demon is rather a complex one, which is why I was confused by your question."
"I'll explain it all to you tonight, if you'll let me," Fletcher replied, wincing as he rubbed his throat.
"Yes, you can tell me over dinner and a drink. My treat, of course. If I remember correctly, James Baker was not a very powerful summoner, so capturing a rare salamander demon like yours would certainly have been beyond his means. Though I suspect he would have kept it for himself if he'd managed to get hold of one,"
Arcturus mused, continuing down the street.
"Is that what it is?"
Fletcher asked, looking at his demon. He grinned as Arcturus turned into an expensive-looking inn, smelling the telltale scent of cooking from inside. Tonight, he would stuff himself with food and soak away his troubles in a hot bath. Then, tomorrow, it was on to the Academy. 16. Fletcher did not learn much more from Arcturus that night. The man was as good as his word, buying Fletcher a steak and kidney pie and listening to his story, leaving out Didrik's part, of course. No sooner had Fletcher finished speaking than Arcturus excused himself and disappeared to his chambers. Fletcher didn't mind. He bathed in a steaming hot bath with a full belly and slept between silk sheets. Even the imp had feasted on a fresh mint steak, devouring it in seconds before nosing his bowl for more. If Arcturus could afford such finery, surely the life of a summoner could not be all bad. In the morning he was woken by an impatient man who claimed that he'd been instructed to take Fletcher to the Academy. When Fletcher emerged into the street, the man bade him hurry up and sit beside him in the front of the wagon, or he would be late for his morning delivery of fruit and vegetables. The journey took over 2 hours, but the driver evaded Fletcher's attempts at small talk, his face pinched with worry at the traffic on the road. Instead, Fletcher passed the time by allowing the imp to ride proudly on his shoulder, grinning at the curious glances from people as they trotted by. After Arcturus had allowed Sakarissa out in the open so brazenly, Fletcher did not see why he couldn't do the same. He tried to picture Vokan's, but he knew so little about it that his mind ranged from imagining a sumptuous palace to a comfortless training ground for fresh recruits. Either way, his excitement mounted with every turn of the cart's wheels. Finally, they arrived at the frontier with the southern jungle, the boom of cannon echoing in the distance. whereas before the dirt road they were travelling on was surrounded by green fields. This land was thick with weeds and pitted with heavy gouges in the earth, evidence of the war that had since passed this land by.
"There's the citadel,"
the driver said, breaking his silence. He pointed at the murky shadow of what looked like a mountain ahead of them, obscured by a thick fog that hung in the air. The wagon had joined a queue of others, though these were delivering heavy barrels of gunpowder and crates full of lead shot.
"What's the citadel? Is that where the king lives?" Fletcher asked.
"No, boy. That's where the Vokans Academy is based. The king lives with his father in a fancy palace in the center of Corsulum,"
the driver replied, giving him a curious look. But Fletcher wasn't listening. Instead, he gazed, open-mouthed, as the fog was dissipated by a heavy gust of wind. The castle was as large as one of Beartooth's peaks. The main building itself was a giant cube made up of blocks of marbled granite, with terraces and balconies layered into the sides, like decorations on a wedding cake. There were four round turrets on each corner, each one with a flat, crenulated top, stretching hundreds of feet into the sky above the main structure. A deep moat of black, murky water surrounded the castle, 20 feet wide, with a steep bank on each side. The drawbridge was down, but all the wagons passed it by, moving towards the cannon fire that still boomed in the distance. As they moved closer to the citadel, Fletcher could see that the walls were thickly latticed with creeping ivy and tinged with lichen and moss. It must have been built centuries ago. The boards of the drawbridge emitted a dangerous creak as the driver clucked his skittish horses over the top of it, but they made it to the other side in one piece. The courtyard was shadowed by the four walls around it, with only a small square of sky illuminating it from several stories up. It was dominated by a semicircle of steps that led up to a heavy set of wooden double doors, the entrance to the castle. As soon as the horses' hooves clopped on the cobbles, a fat man in an apron with a puffy red face emerged from the shadows. He was flanked by two nervous-looking kitchen boys who sprang to work unloading the wagon.
"Late, as usual. I shall have a word with the quartermaster about getting a new supplier if this happens again. We've only half an hour to prepare and serve breakfast now,"
the fat man said, plucking at his apron strings with his pudgy fingers.
"It's not my fault, Mr. Mayweather, sir. An officer forced me to bring this novitiate up, which took me half an hour out of my way. Here, boy, tell him,"
the driver spluttered, prodding Fletcher in the small of his back. Fletcher nodded dumbly, the reality of where he was beginning to hit home.
"All right, then. We'll let this one slide. But you're on my list,"
Mayweather said, with an appraising glance at Fletcher and an even longer look at his demon. Fletcher dismounted as the last of the fruit and vegetables were removed from the back of the wagon and stood, unsure of what he was supposed to do. The driver left without a second glance, eager to be away and on to his next pickup.
"Do you know where you're going, lad?"
Mayweather asked gruffly, but not unkindly.
"You're not a noble-born. That's obvious. The commoners have already been here a week, and I know all the second years by now. You must be new. Did you turn down the offer to come here, then change your mind?"
"Arcturus sent me," Fletcher said, unsure how to answer.
"Ah, I see. You must be a special case, then. We've already got two more of those upstairs,"
Mayweather said, his voice low and mysterious.
"Though they're a little stranger than you, I'll grant you. We don't get many novitiates brought in personally by a battle mage," he continued, stepping closer to peer at Fletcher's imp. "It's usually the inquisitors who find the gifted and bring them in. Battle mages rarely enlist any adepts themselves, because it means they have to give away one of their demons to them. They need every demon they can get their hands on at the front lines.
Seems strange for Arcturus to give you a rare demon like this one, though. I have never seen the like.
Is there someone I need to present myself to? Fletcher asked, eager to get away before Mayweather pried further. The more people who knew how Fletcher had become a summoner, the more likely that his whereabouts would get back to Pelt.
You're lucky. The first day starts tomorrow, so you haven't missed much, Mayweather said. The noble-born candidates will arrive tonight. They tend to spend the week before in Corsulum. It's more comfortable for them there. As for the teachers, they'll be arriving from the front lines tomorrow morning. So you're best off speaking to the provost. He's the only battle mage that doesn't spend half the year on the front lines. Go straight ahead through the front doors, and one of the supporting staff will let you know where to find him. Now, if you'll forgive me, I have breakfast to prepare.
Mayweather spun on his heel and waddled away. Despite the demon nestled around his throat, Fletcher did not feel like he belonged here. The ancient stone spoke of opulence and history. It was not for the likes of him. Fletcher mounted the wide stairs and pushed through the double doors. Best to find the provost before breakfast was served. Then he could introduce himself to the other students over the morning meal. He was not going to be a loner again. He stepped into a huge atrium with twin spiral staircases to his left and right, stopping on each floor. Fletcher counted 5 levels in total, each one bordered by a metal railing. The ceiling was supported by heavy oak beams, massive struts that held the stone above in place. A dome of glass in the ceiling allowed a pillar of light into the center of the hall, supplemented by crackling torches set in the walls. At the very end of the hallway was another set of wooden doors, but it was the archway above them that drew Fletcher's eye. The stone was carved with hundreds of demons, each one more breathtaking than the last. The attention to detail was extraordinary, and the eyes of each demon were made up of colored jewels that sparkled in the light. It was a huge space, almost wasteful in its design. The marble floors were being polished by a young servant, who gave Fletcher a weary look as he walked his dirty boots over the wet surface.
"Could you point me in the direction of the provost?" Fletcher requested,
trying not to look behind him at the footprints he had left.
"Ah, you'll get lost if I don't show you," the servant said with a sigh. "Come on. I've got a lot of work to do before the nobles arrive, so don't dawdle."
"Thank you. My name is Fletcher."
"And yours?"
Fletcher asked, holding out his hand. The servant stared at him with surprise, then shook it with a happy smile.
"I can honestly say I've never been asked that by a student," the servant said. "Geoffrey is the name. Thank you for asking. If you're quick, I'll show you up to your quarters afterwards and sort out any laundry for you that you might need doing. Begging your pardon, but from the smell of your garments, it seems you need it."
Fletcher reddened, but thanked him all the same. Although he had washed himself the night before, he'd forgotten that his clothes still smelled like sheep. Geoffrey led him up to the first floor on the east side and down a corridor opposite the stairway. The walls were lined with suits of armor and racks of pikes and swords, left over from the last war. Every few steps they would walk past a painting depicting an ancient battle, which Fletcher would have to tear his eyes away from as Geoffrey pulled him onwards. They passed by a set of large glass cabinets stacked with jars of pale green liquid. Each one contained a small demon suspended eternally within. Finally, Geoffrey slowed down. The servant pointed to a huge mace hung up on the wall. It was studded with sharp stones, each the size and shape of an arrowhead.
"That's the war club that belonged to the orc chieftain of the Amanye tribe, taken as a trophy in the Battle of Watford Bridge. It was actually the provost who struck him down," Geoffrey said with pride. "A great man, our provost. Strict as a judge, though. You be careful of him. Look him in the eye, and don't backchat. He hates both the spineless and the insolent,
in equal measures.
With those words, Geoffrey stopped at a heavy wooden door and banged on it with his fist.
Come in!
Shouted a booming voice from inside. 17. The room was stiflingly hot compared to the chilled corridors. A blaze crackled in the corner of the dim room, spitting sparks that were sucked up into the flue of the chimney.
Shut the damn door! It's bloody freezing out there!
The voice boomed again. Fletcher jumped to obey, as he noticed a figure sitting behind a large wooden desk in the center of the room.
Let's be having you! Step lively now! And remove that hood from your face! Don't you know it's rude to cover your head indoors?
Fletcher hurried into the room and pulled his hood down, revealing the demon that had taken refuge there soon after Fletcher had set foot in the citadel. The figure harrumphed and then struck a match, lighting a lamp on the corner of his desk. The glow revealed a walrus of a man with a white handlebar moustache and thick mutton-chop sideburns that dominated his features.
I say, that's a rare demon you've got there. I've only seen one of those, and that wasn't on our side either.
The man snatched some glasses from the desk and peered at the imp. It shied away at his gaze, causing the old man to chuckle.
They're fragile little things, but powerful. Who gave it to you? I'm supposed to be informed whenever someone manages to summon a demon outside of the usual species.
The provost boomed. Arcturus sent me, Fletcher said, hoping that answer would be enough.
Impress him, did you? We haven't had a novice brought in by a battle mage for quite some time. 2 years now, I think. You're lucky, you know. Most of the commoners are given weaker demons to start off with. Mites, usually. They're easier to capture, and when we need a new one, a battle mage is chosen at random to provide it. Doesn't put them in a generous mood, unfortunately. Not the best system, but it's the only one we've got. In any case, I shall be having words with Arcturus about it.
Fletcher nodded dumbly, earning himself a stern glare.
There's no nodding here. You say, yes, Provost Scipio, sir,
the man barked. Yes, Provost Scipio, sir, Fletcher parroted, standing up straight.
Good. Now, what do you want?
Scipio asked, leaning back in his chair.
I want to join up, sir. Learn to become a battle mage, Fletcher replied.
Well, you're here, aren't you? Be off with you. Registration is tomorrow. You can make it all official then,
Scipio said, waving him away. Fletcher left, dumbfounded. He was careful to close the door behind him this time. It had all been so easy. Somehow, everything was falling into place. Luck had been on his side for once. Geoffrey was waiting for him, an anxious look on his face.
Everything okay?
He asked, leading Fletcher back to the stairs.
More than okay. He's allowed me to join up,
Fletcher said with a grin.
Not surprising. We need every summoner we can find. That's why we started making all the changes. Girls, commoners, there's even... well...
You'll see for yourself. It's not my place to say,
Geoffrey muttered. Fletcher decided not to pry, instead being careful not to lose his footing on the dark stairwell.
There aren't many fires or torches here, Fletcher observed as they trudged up the steep stairs.
No, the budget is strained, as it is.
When the nobles arrive, we will warm the place up. Everything has to be just so for them. Or they complain to their parents. Half of them are spoiled little popinjays. But don't get me wrong, some are nice enough fellows.
Geoffrey panted, pausing when they reached the fifth and final floor. Fletcher noticed Geoffrey was even skinnier than he was himself, with dark brown hair that contrasted starkly with a pallid complexion that was almost verging on the sickly.
Are you all right? You don't look so well,
Fletcher asked him. The boy coughed and then took a deep, rattling breath.
I have terrible asthma. It's why they won't let me join up. But I want to do right by my country, so I serve here instead. I'll be all right.